Hey everyone, David Chen here. So thank you so much for being a new listener to the Next Generation podcast. What you're about to hear is a bonus episode I recorded with my friend Justin. It's just him telling the story of how he drove home today. That's the entire episode of the podcast. I found it to be enjoyable. I hope you do too. Please follow Justin on Twitter. He's at Justin M. Kaufman. That's at Justin M. K-A-U-F-M-A-N. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. I'm here with my friend, Justin Kaufman. Justin, how goes it today?
Oh, it goes well. It's a pleasure to be on with the largest audience that your podcast catalog has. So,
This is going out to the tens of subscribers to... I don't even know where I'm going to publish this, but... probably just the Slack, it'll be just for the Slack to enjoy, but we'll see.
I love it.
Today is Tuesday, February 16th, and Justin, you have just been through an ordeal, and you and I and a few other friends have a Slack group where we talk about our lives, and you told a gripping yarn about what happened to you today, and so I thought, hey, why don't we try to capture this yarn in audio form? So let's start by talking about where you found yourself this past weekend. What were you doing, and why were you doing it?
Well, sure. I mean, like every American, my family dreamt of spending a weekend vacation in lovely Clee Ellum, Washington.
Yes. Clee Ellum is a town in like eastern Washington, yes?
Yeah, I would say it's, depending on your circumstances, it can be anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours outside of Seattle. My wife booked a wonderful vacation at what was actually a beautiful cabin with the idea that we would introduce our three-year-old daughter to snow for the first time. Mm-hmm. She may have seen it before, but didn't remember it. And we would go sledding and do all the winter things.
Now, was Clee Ellum going to have snow regardless of what happened in Seattle this weekend? Or, like, I forget, is it one of those snowy places in general?
So Clee Ellum, I believe, has a higher altitude by some margin than Seattle. And so when the weather is inclement, it certainly is snowier there. And I think in general, yes, it is a snowier climate there than it is in Seattle.
So we got hit with... probably the biggest snowstorm I've ever seen in Seattle during my entire time in Seattle, which is like around 7 years, this past weekend. Did you have a sense that the snowstorm would be that big?
Is another way of asking your question saying, did you really need to go 2 hours out of your way to show your daughter snow? Because if that's the question, the answer is no, we did not. But as you noted, of course, it doesn't snow very often in Seattle, so who could have guessed?
Who could have guessed? Who could have guessed that we would have been inundated with a foot of snow this past weekend? Like, seriously, the amount of snow, I guess you've experienced... if you came back today, most of it has already melted. But it was a extremely upsettingly large amount of snow that we got this weekend, right?
Yep, I saw pictures. And yet, it was a very small amount compared to what we saw.
Okay, so you had booked your Airbnb to check out today, Tuesday, February 16th, right?
Correct.
So everything seemed to be on track. You had shown your kids the snow at Clee Ellum, Washington. It was beautiful out there, lovely time. It looked awesome. I saw the photos on Instagram that your wife posted. Looked like a great time for all. And comes time to leave. What happened today?
So it started snowing around the same time, I imagine, it started snowing in Seattle yesterday. But it continued snowing, I guess it was 2 days ago, really. But it continued snowing basically for 48 hours straight. And the original forecast had said it was going to stop snowing sometime last night. And that would have allowed us to get out of Clee Ellum in the morning for our 11 a.m. checkout. In the end, it snowed... more or less continuously, I think, throughout the evening and into the morning. And by the time the morning sort of By the time the morning arrived, it was clear that it was not going to be easy to get out. In fact, I was concerned that we wouldn't be able to get out of these sort of off-roads, this house that we had rented. And so we contacted the host. And
right. The logical thing is, let's extend the stay, right? Because everyone's already snowed in anyway. Like, hey, give you guys an extra night. You know, you'll even pay for it, right? Like, no problem. Extend the stay. Everyone's happy. You know, you can drive home in much more safe conditions.
Exactly. Unfortunately, there were some complicating factors. Number one, the house was booked for starting today for another guest. So there was that. And the second thing was apparently they have a maid service that comes and they are counting on this maid service to come as soon as we get out. In any case, we talked to the host and said, you know, we'd be willing to pay more, like more money if that would help.
Whatever the maid is paying you, we're going to triple it.
Yeah, that's right. We maybe if we had played that card, Dave, things would have turned out differently, but we did not offer against the maids.
You should have reached out to the maid and said, whatever they're offering you to clean this place, we'll triple it.
We'll just stay here and clean it.
We'll stay here and clean it instead, and everyone will be none the wiser.
You know what? You're coming on our next family vacation, Dave. How does that sound? Yeah. So the host wouldn't budge. There was a tiny bit of wiggle room. We got extended from 11 a.m. to noon for our checkout time. And so the legal thinker in me had all kinds of ideas about litigation that must ensue after this. And of course, none of it was real or useful.
Basically, your objective at that point was like, hey, if it is physically impossible for me to leave this location, surely I must have some legal recourse against the Airbnb owner. That was your theory, right?
Yeah. And I continued, I think I even told my wife that, like, you learn in law school that there's a guy in a stormy water and his boat is sinking. And he sees on the shore a person with a house and a ladder, like, that can come down into the water. And that person with the ladder does not lower his ladder and does not give safe harbor to this person who's in this storm, and the person dies. And, you know, it turns out that the person who didn't lower the ladder, he gets screwed by the law. There are civil penalties for that. And so it's one of the rare cases where you have an affirmative duty. If anyone's actually listening to what I'm saying right now, don't quote that on your law school essay because it could be wrong. I didn't do well in law school. But anyways, that was what I was thinking in my head.
So in this equation, in this analogy, you being forced to vacate the Airbnb was the same thing as drowning in a flood.
Drowning me and my family. So yes. It's a times four.
Right.
But anyway, at some point I got over the whole legal thing and ultimately caved in and got in the car and left because what are you going to do? And so, yeah, we hit the road.
Yeah, but the reason you didn't want to leave was why exactly, right? Because I think the path home was snowed in, right?
Correct.
You have to go through Stevens Pass, I think it is.
Yeah. So there's to get home from Cle Elum, the road that you would see on GPS takes you through Snoqualmie Pass, which is it's Highway 90 that runs basically over a mountain. And that is a 2-hour shot from Cle Elum to Seattle, where we live. There's one alternate route that you can, at least that we were aware of, that you can take, which is to take Stevens Pass, which basically makes a big O around where you otherwise have to go through. And that takes 4 to 5 hours.
And we should say these are like, at least Snoqualmie Pass is moderately dangerous, particularly when the weather is inclement, right?
Yeah. Like there are times when you actually are required by law to have like chains on your tires if you want to drive across it, because it's like driving through a mountain, quite literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we started with the idea that we would go slowly and take our route along Snoqualmie Pass and go home. Unfortunately, Snoqualmie Pass was closed in both directions, starting, I think, last night, actually. And so, you know, the host, when we told her that, Said, it's going to be open. It's no problem. I actually don't think the host is even from around here. I don't think the host was aware that it was snowing at all. Like she thought we were like frantic, like new parents or something. In any case, the alternative, the Stevens Pass route, which, you know, was significantly longer with, you know, two kids in the car, was our best bet. And so we started heading for Stevens Pass. Unfortunately, as we were getting closer, Stevens Pass closed as well because cars were like spinning out on Stevens Pass. And so they closed that in both directions as well. But on that notice, they said that they think that they will be able to like clear the cars and reopen it. So it seemed promising. We continued heading in that direction until at some point, my wife, Melissa, says, I don't think we should do this. I think we should turn around. We should go back to Snoqualmie Pass.
So at this point, you've been traveling hours towards Stevens Pass.
No, not hours. I would say it's about 40 minutes, but it's 40 minutes in the wrong direction if we want to take the 2-hour route.
Right, right. Yeah.
So I'm trying to decide what, you know, whether to embrace this sort of feeling of an idea that we should turn around or, you know, stick to the data. Like the data says it's likely to reopen. Stevens Pass is likely to reopen. Uh-huh. We're already pot committed in some ways to Stevens mm-hmm. Pass. We're pretty close.
Yeah.
And Snoqualmie has no actual indication of when or if it's going to reopen. And so weighing all of those factors, I ultimately caved immediately into my wife's idea because the math in my head said that at worst, she'll be wrong and I'll get a credit that I can use at some point in the future in our marriage.
Yeah, if marriages are anything, it's compiling credits and debits and then using them forcefully and strategically against your opponent, which in this case is your spouse, right? I mean,
I'm laughing because it's true. That is exactly what marriage, they don't tell you that, but that's what it is.
Uh-huh. So you're like, okay, well, I'm going to turn around, drive 40 minutes back the way I literally just came from.
Correct.
Head towards Snoqualmie Pass, because someday I'm going to be able to use this to like refurbish my man cave or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, to be honest, let's be clear. We have two kids in the car. One is 3 years old. The other one's 6 months old. This is like a ticking time bomb, basically, in the car. So I also want her to be right. Like, I want us to get on the road to Snoqualmie Pass.
Yeah, and so it's real. Tell me about this ticking time bomb. What do you mean by it's a ticking time bomb?
So if you've never traveled with even one child before, being in the car is actually fairly nice. In fact, you probably take for granted how quiet and peaceful.
You mean in general, being in the car?
Like, yeah, just going on a road trip or traveling from place to place as an adult. But with children, I mean, this is the case all the time, even at home. But it is doubly the case in a car that at any moment, a child can erupt in any sort of fit or health issue or any number of things can happen that can require you to completely pull over and divert everything you're doing. Basically, you know, be a firefighter and go and put out the fire. And so you're doing your, basically your role as a parent during a road trip is to not shake anything too much or not rattle anything too much, just to try to keep everything at peace because it's very easy to disturb that balance.
What activities would you define as shaking or rattling things?
So like you immediately limit the volume on music or podcast or whatever you're playing in the car because, you know, too loud and that can lead to screaming. I think you also, if you hear your kids say something, there's a time window that's much shorter in which you have to respond when you're in the car because, you know, a kid that feels ignored, that can go south pretty fast. Food issues, if they're hungry, you actually have to predetermine when they're going to be hungry because if you don't get ahead of that, I mean, you're in for another stop. Anyways, the list goes on, but that's not really the heart of the story. The point here is that anything could happen, and I want us to get on the road from Snoqualmie Pass home because 2 hours is a long time already.
Even without the extension. Okay, so yes. Did you decide to follow Melissa's intuition and go back to Snoqualmie Pass?
I did. Part of the reason for that was because we So on the website where we were getting our updates about Snoqualmie Pass and Stevens Pass, the Snoqualmie update said that they were going to be reassessing and posting an update at 3 o'clock. I think by this time it must have been like, I don't know, 1:30 or 2. And I think Melissa had like read an ad in the paper or wherever one reads an ad these days for like beautiful Suncadia estates. I've never heard of Suncadia myself, but she had mentioned it like several times on the way.
It's a popular resort in Washington.
Okay, yes. So you've heard of it. You've read the same papers.
I've never been, but I've had many friends that have gone to Suncadia. Yes.
Fair enough. So Suncadia apparently is at least on the way back to the Snoqualmie route. So we start heading to Suncadia, and Suncadia is fine. We get out and like walk around in the sleet and rain, and it's mostly miserable actually. And the only things I remember about Suncadia in retrospect are there's a speed limit sign for 19 miles per hour, which is amazing.
What was the objective of the Suncadia trip? Just like it's a nice place to go in case we get marooned here, or
sorry, the objective of the Suncadia trip is Melissa will get to see what Suncadia is because she's intrigued, and we will get to like get out of the car for a minute. And move legs.
So it's like a rest stop on the way.
You could say it's like a weird luxurious or supposedly luxurious rest stop. Yes. Yes, that's what Suncadia was supposed to be. I will not remember much about Suncadia. But Suncadia got us to 3 o'clock, which was a really important marker in this story because by the time 3 o'clock rolled around, we got an update. And that update did a few things. The update said Snoqualmie Pass is open. So number one, that meant that Melissa was right. Turning around and heading back to Snoqualmie Pass was a good idea because it was going to save us time. Second thing it meant was, there was another update. Stevens Pass was still closed. So she was right twice.
Wow, nailed it.
Yeah,
nailed it.
Melissa's feeling was spot on. And that made me right for immediately embracing her idea.
Really, in the end of the day, you deserve all the credit for this, right? Because you listened to her, right?
Like, I didn't want to say that out loud. And I don't think your listeners needed you to say it out loud. But
yeah,
I think we're all thinking it.
It's all you. It's all you. If anything went right, it's because of you.
I'm behind the wheel. Somebody's making the call at the end of the day, right?
Yep.
Glad we're on the same page with that.
Yeah.
Moving right along. My wife's not going to hear this podcast, right?
You're at Suncadia, and Snoqualmie Pass looks like the way to go still.
That's right. We get back in the car. Kids are okay. Throw in a Daniel Tiger for one of them. And to be honest with you, the next 2 odd hours are surreal in that it's silent in the car. It's glorious in the car. Like, I'm driving. My wife's in the backseat in the middle between the two kids, one of whom I think is sleeping most of the time. The other one who's like totally sunken into a season of Daniel Tiger on the iPad. And I'm listening, I'm just jamming in the front to my like Spotify best of playlist. And like, I'm just-
You're in the zone.
In the zone. I'm dodging like glaciers and like, I'm like running through leopards and snow cheetahs. That's not a thing. Anyways, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And this goes on for 2 hours until I look at the GPS and I'm like, wow, holy crap. We're 16 minutes away from home.
You're basically home at this point.
Like, yeah. From what started out as like, I thought I was going to spend the day in court filing a lawsuit to like the greatest travel experience of my life with kids.
Biggest turnaround for any person's travel day, possibly ever.
Possibly ever. Yes, I agree. Except look at the GPS again, 16 minutes from home. I can see Seattle. I can see West Seattle where I live. I can see it with my eyes. And
like you can see it from the road, you're saying? Or you can see it on the GPS?
So I'm where I'm driving, actually, is like sort of, it's adjacent to the bridge, but there's that area where you're sort of above West Seattle and you can see the houses.
Yeah, so you
sort
can
of open
see
down.
Your home from...
Yeah, well, I could see my old home, probably.
Yeah.
Closer to that. But in any case, I can see home base, let's just say.
Yeah, tantalizingly close.
Yes, I can taste it. And then out of nowhere, both children at the same time, a two-alarm fire, start screaming. It was actually sort of funny at first because like my wife and I looked at each other and we were like, it was too good to be true. We were never going to make it this whole way. So, you know, I think the unspoken thing that we both had in our head was, we'll just deal with 16 minutes of crying, because we're certainly not stopping the car. There's no way. Like any parent would not stop the car 16 minutes away from their home.
Would a typical protocol be to stop the car, like go to a gas station or something, and do what exactly?
Well, no. So it's actually a formula you learn, I think, on day one as a parent. Is there's a ratio of total time driven to ETA, to destination, that dictates whether or not you would consider stopping. So we were dealing with, I'd been in the car driving for about 5 hours, a 5 hour drive time to a 16 minute ETA, there's a 0% chance of stopping.
It's all about the ratio. It's all about the ratio.
Yeah. Right? Like if it's like a 30 minute drive and you're 14 minutes in and they start screaming, yeah, maybe you'll stop, because, like, you know, everyone has that.
But I guess what I'm asking is, you're saying you'll stop. What do you do when you stop? Like, what is the objective of the stop?
The objective of the stop is to reset the kid. You take the kid out of the seat. Part of the reason that that the fits become bigger in the car is because they're like strapped in, like they're fully restrained in these like 5-point harnesses in their car seat. Like it's basically they're tied up back there. And so they're sad about something real. And then they're just sad that they can't move. So you stop and you take them out and tell them it's okay. And then you restrain them again in their car seat and hope that you can last the rest of the way. But that wasn't going to happen here because we were only 16 minutes away,
right,
Dave.
Right.
So
I don't know if you're aware of this, but Justin and his family were only 16 minutes away from home.
Yes.
At this correct. Point in time. Yeah.
So picking up where we're 16 minutes away from home, next thing that happens, they're both screaming. My wife and I are smiling at each other because that's silly and fun. And suddenly, my 3-year-old daughter starts projectile vomiting all over the car. Like, and it wasn't just like, when I think of vomit, I think of like just like gross liquid, and it's not appetizing. And most of the listeners who don't exist, because you're not doing anything with this recording, are probably tuned out at this point. But that was not what this was. This was like, you know how like you can recreate the meals that somebody's had based on?
Yes.
You could actually just put the whole meal on the plate. It was like full oranges and like I'm not kidding.
Orange slices with all the rinds, you know, still there.
Totally. And yeah. Like my wife and I, we decided like it's possible our daughter doesn't know how to chew. Like she just swallows the whole thing of everything she eats. It was disturbing. But
she starts projectile vomiting for, it seems like, quite a while.
It seemed like quite a while. I'm sure it actually lasted for like a matter of seconds, but it felt like a long time at that moment.
And like, what does it get onto in the vehicle? Like everything? Like
everything. Not just everything. Like everyone had some share of vomit on them at some point. Like maybe my 6-month-old daughter was spared. I don't know, but.
And was she okay? Do you think it was just car sickness, or was it?
Yeah, it definitely was. So like I had the same thing growing up. We used to drive like 6 hours to Montreal, and every time it's like it's in the genes. I would just throw up. We would make it part of our, like, we would plan a stop around me throwing up when I would go on these family trips.
It would be part of the itinerary, you know?
So predictable.
Here's the, you know, 1:10, we'll stop at the Cracker Barrel. And then at 3 o'clock, Justin gets out for his customary vomit.
Honestly, it's not far from the truth. But anyways,
your wife is projectile vomiting.
Not my wife. My daughter.
Your daughter was projectile vomiting. Correct.
Yeah. Wait for chapter two.
Yeah.
And so I try to figure out the safest place to like stop, because it's actually somewhat dangerous at that point when they're strapped into their harness and they're vomiting. Like, you don't want them to choke on their own vomit, obviously.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, here's the thing, Justin, about you. Is you, like me, are a fairly expressive person, right? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you are a professional poker. You have been a professional poker player in the past, but it's hard for us to have a poker face when it comes to how we feel about something, right? If you like something, I'm generally going to know about it, and vice versa. So when your daughter is projectile vomiting, like, do you have any kind of reaction to this? Are you screaming? Like, what are you just kind of playing it cool? Like, what is your mindset at this point?
If you asked Melissa what I looked like, she'd probably have a different answer, if I'm being honest, than I'm going to tell you.
Uh-huh.
The way that I remember myself was sort of the picture of cool. Like, so it's happening. I know it's happening. I accept it in my head. It's a little bit disturbing, but I'm like, Justin, stay calm. You're going to turn into the lane where you can stop the most easily.
Uh-huh.
So that we can get your daughter out of the car seat. And then, you know, as I'm about to tell this next piece of what happened, it makes me realize I could not have been cool and collected, because the next thing I do is turn across two lanes of traffic into like an alleyway where there's like very unsavory looking elements, let's just say. and I park diagonally, like blocking a driveway.
Right. Okay.
The scene doesn't look good for me anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it
looks like what it is, which is a father freaking out at this projectile vomit.
Yes.
And
yes,
you know, doing what he can to reset the child, as it were, right?
Yes. Yes. And I'm walking over broken shards of glass because that's where I am.
You get out of the car. There's shards of glass all over the ground, indicating that likely a car prowl has occurred where you are, right?
Some unsavory acts have taken place for sure.
Yeah.
And I take my daughter out of the car. She's covered in six of the past six meals that she's eaten. and the interesting thing was, she's screaming not because she vomited for the first time she would certainly be able to remember, because I would imagine that's an unfamiliar feeling. Yeah. But she's crying because she's wet. Like she's most upset that her shirt is wet. And this has actually been a recurring theme. She does not like when her clothes get wet. So I'm holding her. Her vomit is like, I'm holding her against my chest. So her vomit is rubbing against my shirt. And I feel it. You can hear it. Like it's sort of like, as I walk and take steps, I can hear it sort of squeaking up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm now like realizing I could vomit because of this. So I have to stay strong. I have to like not think about vomiting at all.
Yeah.
And
does being a dad kind of make you more immune to you being sick and vomiting? Like,
well, with poop, yes. Like before you're a dad, you don't even talk about poop really at all.
Yeah.
Then you become a parent, and I think poop is like at least the top one or two topics I discuss in a given day. So poop, I'm immune to now. I'm like, I can deal with the whatever kind of poop comes my way.
You can look at poop. You can rub poop on your face. You're not going to gag, basically.
Yeah, I'm just around poop all the time. I'm cleaning poop all day. So who cares?
Yeah.
Vomit, I think, is a little different. You're not around it often. You don't get sort of conditioned to it. So yeah, it was an unfamiliar thing for me. And I'm standing there in the middle of the street. Not in the middle of the street. On the sidewalk next to this busy street, holding my daughter in my arms, taking her clothes off, not able to actually put her down. So like, you know, all the while just getting more and more vomit all over me.
You can't put her down because of the glass on the ground?
Yeah, she doesn't have shoes on. It's a full disaster. Like, I think if I could replay it and actually act like the cool and collected dad that I originally pictured myself as, I would have done things differently. But as it was, I had to strip her naked basically on the sidewalk, get clothes out of our suitcase. And by the way, if you've ever packed a car for a family of four, like you spend a morning unpacking clothes for your kid, not like on the fly while you're holding them. So I had to like take a sled out of the car. Like it looked like I set up like a weird shanty, like on the side of the road. Just to get her like a shirt.
People thought you were
doing
like a mini yard sale right on the side of the road in this rough part of town.
Yeah, I can only imagine how bizarre looking it was. But eventually we got her like, I got a weird sweatshirt and pants and something else on her. And I put my shirt over the vomit on the car seat and put her back in it and said, it's just going to be a little wet. So let's expect that. And, you know, she took in the rest of the Daniel Tiger that she was watching. And our 6-month-old screamed the entire way back. But you know what? That was okay, because at the end of the day, we got home, and really, it was only 2.5 hours of driving once we got on Snoqualmie Pass. So,
well, I was really glad to hear you made it home okay, because you were getting pretty apocalyptic there, talking about this person kicking you out of the Airbnb. I was worried you're going to have to spend the night in the car, but I'm glad you're back home, Justin. I'm glad you're back home.
Hey, Dave, I appreciate you letting me tell the story.
You know, thinking back on this whole day, Justin, Do you feel like you've learned any lessons?
That's a great question. Always listen to your wife. I think it's just the safest thing. It worked today and it works almost every time. So that's my advice.
Thank you for sharing this story, Justin. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah. Follow me. Come on. I lose followers every day, even though I'm trying to gain them. It's Justin M. Kaufman. Maybe it's hard to spell. Dave is gonna put it out there. He promised I would double my follower.
Why don't you spell it just in case I don't do that?
just in case you forget.
Yeah.
It's Justin M, like Matthew, Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N. And when you follow me, your dreams will come true. That's all I can tell you.
Thanks for sharing your story today, Justin.
Thanks, Dave.